Testing, testing. This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Today we're introducing a new series of oral histories based on the history of one of Decatur's greatest assets, Millikan University. And our guest today is Mr. R. Wayne Gill, better known to many as Hank Gill. Well, Mr. Gill, you've had a long association with Millikan. Can you tell us how it started?
Well, I was born in Clay County at Flora, Illinois, and when I was 5 or 6 years old, I came to Decatur with my grandmother to visit my aunt, Dr. Clara A. Garber, who had started her practice here at the turn of the century. And when visiting her, her office and living quarters were in this Powers building, and her office was on the north side of the building facing the Millikan National Bank.
So did you just visit here in Decatur first?
Yes, I visited here first, and when I came to visit my aunt, many times she pointed out Mr. Millikan as he was on the street and so forth. And then in 1907, my mother moved to Decatur, and we lived close to the campus, and I was associated with Millikan from that time on, because Jimmy Ashmore, who was the athletic director and coach of all the athletic teams, lived across the street. And I grazed his horse, and I came over to the university and carried water for the football team. And when they built the gymnasium back in 1911, that's where I started my basketball career.
Well, that was a boy's dream, wasn't it, to have all that, all those opportunities for sports and athletics and individual coaching and so on?
That's right.
So you really had a natural association with Millikan from your earliest years.
Yes, I did. And back then, from Oakland Avenue, I was on Oakland Avenue going over to the West Main corner when Mr. Millikan's cortege was taken into the auditorium at his funeral. I saw the cortege and knew it.
That was in 1909, wasn't it?
That's right.
I believe that's
mm-hmm.
right. When you first saw Mr. Millikan as you were looking out the window of your aunt's office, did you have any impressions of him?
Well, he was a very impressive man, and she explained to me some of the history of Mr. Millikan, how he came to Illinois and how he started the bank over on Merchant Street and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot about him.
Mm-hmm. Did you finish your high school schooling here in Decatur?
Well, when we came to Decatur, I was in the fourth grade at Gassman School. I went through Gassman School and then to the eighth grade, they called it then, which was, I guess, the junior high school. And then from there to the Decatur High School. Decatur High School then was a relatively new building.
Mm-hmm. And then you finally got to Millikan as a student.
I came out to Millikan in the fall of 1917 as a student at Millikan.
Well, now, 1917, that was right in the midst of the First World War, wasn't it?
That's right. And in the fall of 1918, they formed a unit here known as the Student Army Training Corps, and we called it Stuck at Taylor's College. And we were here until the armistice was signed on November 11, 1918, and we were mustered out around the middle of December.
Well, what did you do as a part of that unit?
Well, we did everything that they do in a military unit. We drilled and all that sort of thing.
Did you have guns?
And Well, we had wooden guns. And, of course, we also had some academic work along with the military.
Mm-hmm. Now, you called it Taylor's College. That was because...
That's when Dr. Taylor was the president.
Right.
And our captain, the first captain we had, was a brusque guy who used foul language, and he didn't stay here but about 4 weeks because Dr. Taylor went to Washington and got him removed.
He didn't realize that Army language wouldn't do on a college campus for young boys.
When he called out commands, you could hear him all over the West End of Decatur.
He really meant it.
That's right.
Well, then, fortunately, you didn't have to serve in the war. The war was over.
Only in the
training corps.
Corps, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, then you returned to your academic studies?
Yes, in December, after Christmas vacation, school went on as it had prior to the training program. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me, did you go into athletics as a career then, or what was your course of study?
No, my course of study was science, chemistry mostly.
Uh-huh. So you studied the regular
academic program,
and you did sports on the side.
Oh, yeah, well, that's part of the education program.
Right, and the fun, too.
That's right.
Well, now... you probably have seen many changes in the campus over these years. What are some of the outstanding changes you've noticed in the campus itself?
Well, first of all, the School of Music building was built about 1913, and there was no more building on the campus then until 1932, when the Gorin Library was constructed. And the changes on the campus, there's been so many. First of all, of course, during the First World War, the back campus was built up with barracks and mess halls and so forth, and of course they were all taken down after the training program was over. And then I came back to the university as business manager in 1946, and my first job was to put barracks on the campus for the World War II veterans, and trailers, and the whole north side of the campus was blanketed with barracks and trailers.
That was for the Second World War.
That's
well,
right.
We'll come to that in a bit, but maybe we should establish that the building, this main building, was the very first building.
Main building and the powerhouse were the first buildings on the campus, mm-hmm. yes. And then Aston Hall was built early around, I think, 1957, mm-hmm. sometime in there.
Now, in the biography of Mr. Mellican that Mr. Taylor wrote, Albert Taylor, he talks about the old assembly hall. What room was that?
That was the auditorium, which is one of the best auditoriums as far as sound and so forth is concerned. It's now named Albert Taylor Hall. It's in the middle of the liberal arts mm-hmm. building.
It's been made into a theater?
It's now a small theater, mm-hmm. yes.
And that was where the whole student body used to gather.
That's
for the
right.
first
for
assemblies.
For assemblies, and we had them every day.
Did you have chapel programs?
Chapel there? Programs every day. Yeah.
Were required?
That's right.
Now, that brings us to the association of the university with the church. It did have some connection with the Presbyterian Church, didn't
well,
it?
Well, it's an affiliation. Actually supported uh-huh. by, or the school wasn't founded as a Presbyterian uh-huh. institution.
But it did have the background of the church.
That's right.
Behind it. Well, do you notice any particular changes in the curriculum? Didn't Mr. Mellican first want to make this a kind of vocational school? Or what was his idea in founding the university?
Well, his idea in founding the university was to provide vocational training. He believed that everyone should have a vocation, should be able to make a living. And as far as changes are concerned, it's about the same as it was when he founded. You have a School of Business Administration, you have the music school, and you have the liberal arts, arts and sciences, and also you have the industrial management.
Engineering?
Engineering, yes.
Right. At least pre-engineering.
And of course, one of the changes is that back in the early days, Professor L.M. Cole was the head of the industrial arts department, and they had manual training and forging and all those things that they taught, and now it's more streamlined into an administrative type of engineering.
But now, of course, they've added this quite a strong academic program, too, haven't they, to the vocational training. It isn't just a trade school.
No, it's not a trade school at all. They have always combined the liberal arts with the...
with some way of earning your living along with
right.
it. Well, why don't we talk for a minute about... some of the people you remember associated with the school, maybe some of the coaches or the professors or students. Who are some of the people that stand out especially?
Well, Professor L.M. Cole is one. Professor Townsley, who was principal of the academy.
By the way, that is no longer in existence.
No, the academy isn't in existence now, but
it was a
training back in the early
school, preparatory school.
That's right. And Grace Patton Conant, she was head of the English department, and when she left, Mrs. Davita McCaslin and Miss Charlene Wood, and Clyde Hart, who was an outstanding student, he was also in the English department. Another outstanding student was Dr. William Casey, who ended up at Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And
in Columbia, in what capacity?
Well, he was in the history department, I think.
Became a professor at Columbia.
Yes, became a professor at Columbia. And Dr. John C. Hessler was the head of the chemistry department, and he also served as dean. And later, in 1930s, he became president.
Oh.
And William Henderson was also in the... in the chemistry department. Dr. Tyler was in the biology, and as far as the presidents are concerned, I either went to school to all of them or served under them, except one, and that was Dr. Fellows. And
what do you remember of them?
Well, Dr. Taylor was a very fine administrator. Dr. Hessler came back. He was the university was kind of in flux, and he brought it back together.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Malone, as president, pulled the community together. Yeah. And Dr. McKay had a great influence on the university, and there was a lot of new buildings, the curriculum was looked at, and so forth. And of course now Dr. J. Roger Miller has taken it up and has been president for the last 10 years.
So each president added some contribution.
Oh, yeah, very, very much so. Dr. Malone's tenure, the school science hall was built.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back now to your own college days. When did you graduate?
Well, I didn't graduate from Mulligan. I broke my arm in basketball in my senior year at the end of the first semester.
Well, that was bad luck.
21, and I took the next semester to make up the work of the first semester, and then I went as an assistant to Bill Muir at Decatur High School in the athletic department in 1921-1922. And then I was prevailed on by a couple of my buddies to go to West Virginia, Bethany College in West Virginia, and that's where I graduated in 1923.
Then what kind of jobs did you have?
Well, my first position was Norman Wan was the coach here when I was in Mulligan, and when I graduated from Bethany, he went from Mulligan to Earlham College, Richmond, Indiana, and he wanted me to come there as freshman coach, which I did for 1 year, and then I the next 2 years I was at Northwestern Military and Naval Academy in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. I came back to Mulligan in the fall of 1926.
Mm-hmm. On the staff here? On the coaching staff?
I was basketball and track coach, yes. Until 1937, when I went with the Recreation Department as the Superintendent of Recreation here in Decatur. And I stayed with that until 1946 when I came back here as business manager.
So you have really been associated with Mulligan off and on all your life.
That's right.
Well, let's, we said earlier we were going to talk about World War II. Maybe we're about up to World War II now. If you came back here in 46.
I came back here in 46, and the first thing I did was blanket the north side of the campus with barracks and trailers for the veterans who were coming back, and we got up to an enrollment of 1,600.
Mm-hmm. That was the time of the GI Bill.
That's right, the GI Bill. And those barracks stayed on the campus until we built the science hall in 1953. We took some of them off, and then gradually we took them all off, and we built the dormitories and Kirkland Fine Arts Center and Griswold Physical Education Center.
Well, those were quite exciting years right after World War II, weren't they, with all those boys coming back?
Oh, yeah.
After all those experiences.
Yeah, we were, the university was really overloaded as far as space and so forth was concerned, but we managed to take care of it.
Well, now, are there any of the other students that you especially remember? Maybe some of your classmates or somebody that you remember especially?
Oh, I remember, yeah. I remember a lot of them. I remember some of them when I was a kid and carrying water around here. Bob Evans, who later coached at Stanford and was in Mrs. Curity's business in California. Joe Catlin, who was captain in World War I. And I mentioned Clyde Hart and William Casey, Orville Deal, Chester Cox. There were, we've always had a lot of fine students.
Well, that's great. Well, now, in reading Mr. Mulligan's biography, we're very much aware of the high ideals that he had when he founded the university. What do you think Mr. Mulligan would think if he'd return today to the campus?
Well,
for the university.
I think Mr. Mulliken was a far-sighted man, and he was far-sighted and so forth in establishing the university, and I think he would change with the times, mm-hmm. and I think what's happened, he probably would very much approve of.
You think he'd be very pleased
with
the university today?
Because the university still has the same tone as he mm-hmm. had envisioned it mm-hmm. to have.
Well, that's a wonderful tribute, isn't it, to a man's dream, to see it come into reality this way and be such a force in the community.
That's right, and of course, he left his entire state in trust, and it's administered mm-hmm. by the trustees of the estate of James Mulliken, and every year his shadow lengthens.
Mm-hmm.
The estate has contributed to the charities and education in the city of Decatur some $7 million over mm-hmm. the years.
Well, a wonderful contribution. Well, what do you think, see, for the future of Mulliken?
Well, I think it, it will maintain its same posture. I think we'll have the arts and sciences, and the schools of business and music and industrial management.
I think we should mention that although you've had such a long association with Mulliken, you're still working here. You're still busy. We're in your office here at the university, and you're still very energetic and very much a part of the university.
Well,
what is your work now?
Well, they're very kind to me. I retired in 1963, and then became assistant to the president with Dr. McKay until 1968, and then I've been secretary treasurer since 1953, and I so the board has been very kind. They let me have an office, and I'm still secretary treasurer of the university.
Well, that is really a great contribution to the school, and a great recognition of what you have done, too.
Well, I appreciate the fact that they have let me have a place to hang my hat.
So you really aren't really retired?
Well, no, I'm not. I keep busy. If I couldn't, mm-hmm. I don't know what would happen.
Do you have any special hobbies other than your work with the university?
Oh, I've got hobbies. I play golf and
you keep up your interest in athletics?
Athletics and mm-hmm. so forth, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks as if you found the secret for a very happy life and a very worthwhile contribution.
Yeah, well, I've always said I'd be willing to do it all over again.
Well, that really puts a final stamp on it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It shows that you really have not only contributed a great deal, but you've enjoyed it all along the way.
All along, that's right. All the things I've done.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your memories of Mulliken University, Mr. Gill. We really appreciate hearing about the times that you have spent here and what has happened to the university over these years. You've been listening to the memoirs of Mr. R. Wayne Gill, that is, Hank Gill. He is business manager emeritus of Mulliken University, and along with all of his other jobs that he has here. This is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library.